Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Gosh, I feel like I should be on a, you know, some kind of a wheel thing to just take it away and go. But here we are, back after a two-week hiatus. Yes. Or a week and a half hiatus. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So this is Elvira, and Deb, my co-hostess, is also making comments, and we're going to be getting ready as the show, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starts to move forward. We are in a new month, so our subject is basically for the month, inner transformation. And then what we have is the goddess, or we'll discuss whether we call her a goddess or what we call her. Melusine or Melusina, and you know, she is of the water, spirit of the water, and it's fresh water, not ocean water. So now I think we will just sort of jump in and, you know, get kind of going with what's happened so we can talk about this in a little bit. I do want to mention in the advance is that a very dear friend of mine, very long-term friend, passed away. I just found out about it, that it happened earlier this year. And so because she was very much into the French culture and all of the different French history and, you know, had gone to France several times, we decided, okay, Deb and I, to dedicate the show of Melusina to Kay Brenner, who had a great love for not only French and France and all that, but for a lot of the unusual, and I was one of her unusual friends. So that being the case, my time has been spent with, you know, helping get my granddaughter from school and get her situated, and then obviously I was rather excited because I, you know, finally got all my Christmas and Halloween tubs down to my storage shed on my property, because it was either snowed and iced or it was messy wet, so I couldn't take my dolly and truck it down there. So that was a real fun thing. And by the time that all happened, I started getting into the concept that we're going to have spring, and I wanted it now as opposed to later. So, but other than that, it's been, you know, kind of just plugging along, trying to keep a focus on, you know, my clients and some of the things that I'm looking to start putting more energy into for this year. And I got my car fixed, my second car, got its heating system taken care of, so I feel really good about that. And, oh, then I'll turn it over to you. My first car, which is my first love, she only got to get started. I would move her up and back for in the carport so she could get some movement, because she's very low to the ground, not something you take out in snow, ice, or, you know, like deep water. And so I made an appointment with my mechanic this week to come in on next week and bring her in so she can get kind of a look over and make sure everything is fine so that I can start driving her, since our weather is starting to turn into a better time to drive the car. And he really thinks I'm, you know, I don't want to say the bee's knees, but he thinks I'm very funny. And turns out that, you know, I was making a lot of jokes about the different things that we had done for my car and this car and the other car. So I told him that he's got a strange lady for a customer, but he says, "You make me laugh." I said, "So that's my job. Over and above, I pay you for what you do. I make you laugh." So, that's been my week and a half. So how's it been with you?
Yeah. This has been an interesting week. It just, there was like a couple of different things that happened with me. Even though I've had grandkids for several days over at my house, and they are kind of distracting. Mm-hmm. But there's been like other things that have been very interesting. Like, okay, so my mom's birthday was yesterday, and she's passed away for many years now, since 85. So it's been a long, long time. But she was an Aquarius. She was a very opinionated person, very vivacious, and really got you going. I mean, she really, I would say my mom was probably one of the most interesting persons I've known.
Mm-hmm.
And she passed away way too soon. But about 10 days ago, I was really missing her. And, you know, I always think about her, but sometimes I kind of miss her more than other times. Like, when there's things that are going on where I wish I was able to, you know, call her up or tell her about it and that. And, and it had been quite a while since I had sensed that she was around me. And so, you know, I kind of, about 10 days ago, I was like, you know, Mom, give me a sign. I'm really, really missing you. I'd like to know that you're around. And so within the past week leading up to her birthday yesterday, there was like a number of things that happened. A couple of different times in the house, I heard walking, like somebody, you know, and that's when I was in the house by myself and there was nobody there. Then last week we went, Saturday night we went and saw this play that was so funny. It was like a remake or whatever of the old movie Xanadu. Anyway, was this song in there, Suddenly, and I just remember my mom really liking that song, and it's been in my head ever since. I didn't care for Xanadu the movies too much, but the play was hilarious, and the song, I just felt like it was a real message. Then the last thing that happened was 2 days ago, I was sitting in my band, I have a lot of earrings, so I have like these earring stands, and there's two of them, and they're round, so you can kind of push them, you know, turn them to get the earrings that you want or whatever. And one of the stands started turning by itself, and it turned in a very uniform, steady way, and it turned about 10 times. Like that, I haven't had something that remarkable happen for quite a long time, and I was like, Mom? And that the feeling just washed over me that, yeah, that was her. And it's like she found some very inventive, creative ways of, you know, letting me know that, yeah, she's there. So,
yeah.
And then, yeah, you know, the other thing, I guess, that I thought was kind of interesting, well, there's a couple other things that happened that were kind of like little challenges that I thought were kind of cool. But I had somebody contact me through air who is an artist in California. And she was like, "Hey, I would like to see, I know you do psychometry, so I'd like to see if you could read a series of paintings that I did." And and she said, "I know this is probably a little outside of what you usually do." And I was like, "Huh, that is, because I usually have read people, photos, clothing, jewelry, you know, other personal items." Mm-hmm. But But I was like, no, you know, I would give that a try. That sounds like an interesting experience. And so I did. She sent me her paintings, and I was like, I was blown away with how much I got in touch with them and some of the messaging and images and stuff that I picked up from them. It was a really fun experience, and I think that that's good for me every once in a while to do something a little different, a little outside of the usual, you know. And so that was a fun thing that came up this past week too.
Well, that's been a real adventure. Then we both have had very interesting weeks and times. So I think we better delve into Melusina just because this is going to be a really interesting topic. And I want to thank you, Deb, for being the one to mention it when we were doing our brainstorming for our topics, because we started out, you know, going through all these things, and then when I got to this, and of course I'm looking at, you know, the legend and the myth and the this's and the that, I was going, whoa, this is really interesting. And she basically, you know, she is from the French area, but she also has many connections to Germany and Luxembourg and even Britain and Scotland. So, you know, she kind of has an interesting, you know, congregation of places where she has very important connections, so to speak. And she is a water deity or goddess. We can call her a fae. We can call her a spirit, a water spirit. She is obviously attached to holy wells and, you know, rivers and fresh water. And I would probably even say lakes and springs and things of that nature, because it would kind of pan out in terms of that. And she has a tendency to have a certain kind of physical look. She is a female, a woman, so there is this human body. But she also has a part which the legend and the myth will explain more in detail. But she, from the navel down, she either is a serpent, she could be depicted as a fish with a tail, sometimes two tails, sometimes they give her wings. So she kind of has a combination of imageries, and obviously that gives you an idea that there's something about her physical being that she goes from the human form to the supernatural or fae or spirit area, that she combines the two. And it, you know, gives her the, you know, a mystical energies that she's able to, you know, use in the fabric of reality and, quote, defy the laws of nature to create things. So there is another part of her that, you know, does have magical powers, so to speak. And her name, obviously, Melusine or Melusina. They've still, you know, where does it come from? Well, you know, you got different things, you know, that, you know, it can come from. The one that I found in my, you know, little research was a Latin melus, M-E-L-U-S, which is for melodious and melodious pleasant. So it kind of leaves you to get the idea that, and it's, I was telling Deb when we started talking about this in our, you know, get-together session, is that the way she's described, and I know we're both going to say this at some point again and again, that she is a siren, S-I-R-E-N, and of course she has a look very much like the Starbucks logo, so that is also mentioned a lot.
Oh, that infamous Starbucks logo.
I know. You kind of look at that and you go, oh, my God. So I'm going to turn this over to you to kind of flesh out other things or discuss, you know, something that you really want to bring up, and we'll go from there. When we do break, we'll come back and probably spend more time talking about the myth and the legend and have a more fleshed out idea of her story.
Yeah. So. There's, she's interesting to me, personally. I mean, she's very hard to categorize. But just to give like a little more backstory, it's, her story, I think, was first documented in like the 1390s by a writer. His name was Jean D'Arias, and he wrote like a collection of what they called spinning yarns, as told by ladies in their spinning circle. And so, you know, I can just see that like a kind of like a sewing circle where there was an oral tradition of her story before it was ever written down. And so the basics about her is her mother was a full fairy. And I see that her name was either Proserpina, or I've also seen other sources refer to her as a Proserpine fairy. And so that made me wonder if her name was actually Proserpina, or if she was, if that's the type of fairy that she was. But for now, I'm just going to call her Proserpina. And then her father was the Pictish King Belinus of Elba, which is Scotland. And then her sisters, she had two sisters because they were triplets, were Melior and Palatine. And in 733, Melusine married a guy named Ranfroy de Vere, who was the Prince of Anjou, a place in France. And they had a lot of offspring and a lot of there's always been like many different royal family lines that have said that they are descended from Melusine, which is kind of interesting because there's, seems like there's kind of a dark side and a light side to that, depending on who you're reading and and how you take it. But so anyway, well, the story kind of goes that King Alanus had met Proserpina, the water fairy, at a place called the Fountain of Thirst. And he fell madly in love with her and asked for her hand in marriage. And so she agreed to marry the king under the condition that he never enter her chamber during or just after childbirth, and also when she was bathing. And so shortly after the marriage, she became pregnant with the triplets and gave birth to the three daughters, Melusine, Melior, and Palatine. But the king, you know, as happens oftentimes when there's those promises made, his curiosity got the best of him, and after the urging of an elder son from a previous marriage, who insisted that he go in and see his new wife and babies, he went in and he broke his promise. So at that point, Proserpina was so overcome with sadness because the king broke his promise that she takes the babies and runs away to a hidden island. Some say the island is Avalon. So when the daughters are teenagers, Proserpina takes the girls upon their father's realm, and she tells the girls about the promise that their father broke. Melusine decides to take revenge against her father. She convinces her two other sisters to help, and they kidnap their father and imprison him inside of a mountain. So once Proserpina finds this out, I know she's got to be the worst mother of all time, she becomes very upset and punishes Melusine by telling her that she will become a half-fish or serpent creature every Saturday for the rest of her life. And she also, well, in some versions, she only punishes Melusine, but in other versions, she also punishes the two other sisters. But it seems like they're lesser punishments. So after this, Melusine goes on living in the forest until one day she runs into Prince Ranfroy de Vere, the Prince of Anjou, although some sources say he was a count or a duke. But she ends up comforting him and advising him after he accidentally kills his uncle during a hunting accident. But during the course of this, he fell in love with her, and shortly afterward, they were married. But only after Melusine again set the condition that he promised not to see her in her chambers on any Saturdays. Kind of interesting, Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
So he agreed to the promise, and after they married, Melusine kind of magically built their castle overnight. She also helped him gain power and the favor of the people, and she bore him 10 children, which some say had certain things wrong with them, like one of them had like a really big or things like that. But the
right.
10 children, now of royal lineage, kind of, you know, dispersed over time and ended up founding many of these different royal lines. And it's also said that she was widely loved by the people of the kingdom. So mm-hmm. now this is where the story seems to, depending on the source and what version you're looking at, this is where things kind of change. In the Diarius version, I believe, so he broke his promise, into her chamber, and he saw Melusine bathing in a half-serpent form. So he keeps his transgression secret until one of their now adult sons murdered their brother. So basically the grieving Raymond blamed Melusine and called her a serpent. It was at that point she assumed the form of a dragon because she knew that he betrayed her, provided him with 2 magic rings, and flew off never to be seen again. But she would return at night to nurse her 2 youngest children, who were still infants. So then there's, you know, that's the basic story. But there's like, you know, other, each country seems to have a couple of versions where, you know, in different parts of France, they say that she departed with a loud yell and was never again visible to mortal eyes. But she was supposed to be the protectress of the descendants and was heard wailing as she sailed upon the blast around the turrets of the castle of Lusignan the night before it was demolished. And there's also lore that says that anytime you could hear her cries, it was kind of like the banshee wailing, where it kind of foretold of the death of a loved one. Then there's like another version that says that Melusine, when that happened and he saw her, she sank into the earth and remained trapped in a rock, but returned every 7 years as a woman or a serpent carrying a golden key in her mouth. And that anyone brave enough to take the key and free her would win her as their bride. And so, and also every 7 years, Melusine would add a stitch, a linen chemise. And if she finished the chemise before she can be freed, all of Luxembourg would be swallowed by the lack, by the rack, not the lack. But so basically, there's a lot of different versions. Well, in Germany, I'll just add one more here. In Germany, Martin Luther declared that she was a succubus for the devil.
Mm-hmm.
One more. And then in Britain, she was kind of conflated sometimes with the Lady of the Lake,
mm-hmm.
who spirited away the infant Lancelot and raised the child, and she was a water nymph. So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different, and there's even more different variations of the story, but it kind of follows the same formula where there's a promise made, there's the union of a fae and a human. The human betrays their promise, and then not good things happen after that.
right.
And it's just, you know, I think it's as we listen to these stories, I think it's a good idea just to keep in mind, like, kind of like what was going on in history back then and the context of these stories. There was a lot of, witch hunts and persecutions and a lot of, especially towards women, there was a lot of things going on where, you know, any form of feminine power was not well received. And I want to talk about the Starbucks logo, but I'm going to wait till
we get through with our,
we
have a commercial break, so to speak. So
I know that's coming up.
Yeah, we will let Nagashiva do our commercial now.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and the Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5, all times Pacific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Oh, boy. Here we go again. So what we do have here, and I think that, as you pointed out, through the different stories and what the connection to royal houses became to legitimize, you know, the connection between the pagan and the Christian beliefs, was trying to work a transformation, pulling the pagan symbols and pulling the pagan energy into a more redemption-based aspect. So it's kind of like, to gain the power that they could legitimately wield over the land, over and above killing everybody that disagreed with them or burning them or whatever, they created this bridge that became one that they could utilize the process between what the mythology and the legends of the Fae Kingdom and the energies of supernatural, with obviously the legitimized Christian concepts, will start to make her a better version. Even like, well, she did a lot of good for the people and the people loved her, and you know, but it was the betrayal of the husband. And yet you notice that in most of what you were describing, the husband could redeem her if he chose to, under certain parameters, and each, you know, legend had a specific point of reference to do that. They never did choose to. So they got what they wanted, which was the power of the land, over the land, and then let this other situation go by the wayside. So, it was a manipulation. And if you look at how the church and how they kind of put it around this whole thing, because they had to do something with the people who had this belief and had these, you know, myths that were real to them, get them to kind of go, well, then you guys brought her into your fold and she's okay, so we'll come over to your side a little bit more. And I think mm-hmm. that just by listening to what you've been saying and what I was reading, a lot of that is true. Now, it's interesting that if you take it from a more Jungian psychological point of reference and step aside from the history and the dynamics of that, is that both mother and daughter healed the man, healed him, and then created a union with him. So he healed within that and then went on to, you know, this whole abundance and process of openness, and then and did the same thing but in a different version by disrespecting mm-hmm. her, disrespecting the female, and though, you know, and then it created that. I did find it interesting that, like the hounds that howl when there's the death of a, you know, going to be a death of a royal, and different mythologies, different belief systems, she would shriek mm-hmm. as the dragon to mm-hmm. announce mm-hmm. a destruction of some sort, whether of a war that was happening and the destruction of the people that were going to take over, or the death of one of the different nobles or reigning king, or, you know, that process. So that's kind of what I wanted to share, and then I can, like, you know, I kind of give it over to you, because I know you've got some other things you wanted to talk about, and I want to hear about the Starbucks siren.
You know, thanks, Alvaro. You know, I've always been very drawn to Melusine, and I didn't realize until I started researching her a few years back about the whole Starbucks logo thing. I never knew that was Melusine on there until I did that. And so I had always noticed, though, their kind of unique logo, and it's kind of interesting how that logo has changed over the years. It's kind of been sanitized. I believe that they started out where she was bare-breasted.
mm-hmm.
And you could
yeah.
clearly see the two tails. And it mm-hmm. maybe looked a little provocative, you know. And I believe it was taken from an old woodcut.
Mm-hmm.
But then they've done at least three different versions of it. Where now, in the current version, her hair flows down over her chest, so you don't see her breasts,
mm-hmm.
and you don't see her tails anymore, because they kind of, like, zoom in on her face. So that's, I just found that the whole Starbucks thing is very nautical. I mean, I believe they're in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
on the ocean, and so even like the name Starbucks is the name of the coffee drinking first mate of Captain Ahab in the novel Moby Dick, which I thought was really funny. But the thing is if you start like looking online or on YouTube, there are, you know, a lot of, well, I would say there's not a lot, there's a fair amount of interesting sources that have a background on Melusine, but then there are also a number of videos and other things that talk about like how evil the logo of Melusine is, and that Starbucks is evil thing or whatever. And so I believe that that's just a continuation of something that started, you know, in the Middle Ages, or maybe
mm-hmm.
even before that, where some, that feminine power and the magic of it was demonized.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree with what you were saying. It's like, you know, if you look at, like, what she was actually doing, where she made a mistake, okay, she put her dad in a mountain.
mm-hmm.
You know, but I think you know, they say that they were about 15 years old when that happened. And so, you know, that probably wasn't the nicest thing. But it looks like after that, in her later life, all of the stories about her are saying that she was loved by the people, that she helped the husband and built the castle and all this stuff. And so if we're, like, just looking at what the story is actually saying about her, it seems like it's mostly good stuff. Yeah, and so that's, you know, I think her, just like looking at the underlying themes of her story really can tell us a lot spiritually and magically, just kind of tapping into that. And, well, one of the themes that you mentioned was that whole theme of alchemy and transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Because her story, I mean, the whole, the folklore stories are very powerful. But even like the psychoanalyst, Carl Jung, took an interest in her role in alchemy. And here, put it this way, that Melusine is a manifestation of Luna, the elements of dark, cold, water, and spirit. And as such, she makes the alchemical union with her opposite, which is soul, sun, the source of warmth and light. The union is known by alchemists as the chemical wedding, which signified to Jung the union of body and spirit, or consciousness and unconsciousness. And I think that, you know, that there's a lot of underlying themes, and she is such a magical character that I think it's just a natural to go to, you know, when working with any kind of transformation magic. You know, she also has that. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, no, no. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just.
I had a thought and it flew away.
Well, let me ask you, just kind of backing up a little. So, there's so many variations on her. There's so many different things, like in literature and art, in video games, in movies.
Oh, the video games. Wow.
But it's like, so I'm going to name off a few different things that Melusine's been portrayed as, and I just want to get your gist on, or the feeling that you have of what she actually is. So she, I'm just going to name off a few of them. She's been portrayed as a mermaid, a goddess, siren, a fairy, also a genius Losi, which is the guardian of spirit of a place, a dragon, succubus, a witch, a banshee, and a demon. Were the ones that I thought, just, you know, looking through a few things. Which one of those resonates with you the most? That Melusine would
You're
be.
Gonna laugh. You're gonna laugh. Okay. Obviously, I'm gonna say the dragon right now. It is interesting. I am sitting here with two dragon statues on my table that I normally do readings on, and I had put them here because these are two statues that Kay gave me because she was very much into dragons. Oh. And so I put them there, and that kind of was a physical form. But when the reading of the story where she turns from, obviously when she turns from the water nymph type energy to a dragon that is air, kind of made me think you're going from the emotion, you know, water emotion, it you know, fluid, it's healing, it's sensitive, to air, which isn't necessarily, and you don't see her being a fire-breathing dragon either. They don't talk about her breathing fire and setting fire to, you know, all of the landscape, but just that she takes flight as the air. It's more that I you know, it goes from the feminine to the masculine because, you know, the air is more masculine. It's the mind, it's logic, you know, it kind of is associated with that. So I kind of feel that that energy, it isn't that I think all the others are less. It's just that one draws me because it combines it takes you and moves you out of a physical location as opposed to water, which stays in a location. So I feel more like there's movement, even though the reason that she wound up, you know, going into that point was because she had been betrayed and then her anger took over and, you know, then everything kind of, you know, flew away and that was it. But I'm drawn to that as a way to release yourself from the not the physical world, but the limitations of what the other, you know, the other element of water is. Now, obviously, Fae or, again, genus Loki is basically tied to a location. So you're tied to a physical location. You're tied to the specifics of things, whereas you get a bigger picture if you're, like, flying around. And interesting enough, it's also, you know, we're literally around the corner from the year of the dragon. Now it's a wood dragon, and so it'll be coming up tomorrow and between, you know, like cusp is tomorrow and Saturday. But
Yeah, I knew it was coming up.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. So that's kind of how I feel. What do you feel drawn to?
Well, I love that whole way that you looked at, like, the elements, water and air, because it kind of sounds like also like what Carl Jung was thinking about with the elements of water and then perhaps the soul, the warmth
mm-hmm.
and light of the air,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
and I can see, like, for transformation, I've seen, like, a number of different spells where just using that whole, the whole bathing of, and talking to Melusine as you bathe and asking for help to transform. And
mm-hmm.
just as a little simple, you know, spell that you work on yourself. And so I love that whole theme, alchemy, transforming. And it's also, you know, although I kind of think that Melusine, you know, she was judged, she was called out, and in most versions, it's like she was like, hey, I'm out of here then.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's kind of, you know, like the moral of that or the truth of that matter is that, okay, you know, if you're around people who are not appreciating you for who or what you really are,
mm-hmm.
maybe those aren't the people you should be around. Because
mm-hmm.
If I think of her story where she counseled him and helped him, you know, through his sorrow and the mistakes that he had made and, you know, built a
right.
castle for him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to not accept her when he broke his promise. It's like, you know what? Yeah, it's time for me to move and just, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just go on. And then her story seems to refer again and again in different parts of Europe. And it's kind of neat because I think that there's, not that I know a lot of them, but I know that there's other water deities like her
mm-hmm.
in other parts
mm-hmm.
of the world.
Oh, yeah.
China or Africa, India. But I think that whole theme of alchemy and transformation and kind of that whole theme of being the outsider really
yeah.
fits into her story, too. So it seems like at first she's willing to do anything to fit in and to be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
she's, you know, basically an entity, half fae, half dragon, and half human, who's between two worlds. Sometimes she's portrayed as a hybrid. Sometimes she's portrayed as a monster. And it's really kind of fits into the whole concepts of, like, getting to that place of self-acceptance in your own self and or being open to transformation and being able to grow and cherish your own strengths and weaknesses as you go along, even though others might not, you know. And I also think that so the themes of alchemy of transformation, the major one. It's probably the most major, but there's also the theme of the outsider. And I think looking at the historical context, there's that theme of destruction of the divine feminine because she was more than. And I don't know if you or anybody else listening has ever had that experience where just as, you know, someone who practices magic, divination, or, you know, different alternative spiritualities where you kind of shy back or are afraid of being judged because you're maybe more, you know, outside of the box. You might be more powerful in some ways. And that's not always embraced too well by other people. Sometimes people might be fearful or definitely not appreciate some of those things, you know.
Well, so, I mean, it does present with, you know, when I had my awakening to going into magic and everything, I think I really was in that space where I didn't really care. If people didn't like it, it was not, they weren't for me, you know? And that was kind of the way it was. But I have, over the decades now of where I've, you know, traversed, I've learned to work with what's around me as opposed to declaring what I am. It's kind of like you can see me or you will never see me, but I'm not going to spend my time running around declaring that I'm a witch of this. Why? Because I feel that I am. I embody it. I need never go to, in you know, like I walk my path. So, you know, being in the environment I'm in, I don't spend my time running around going, hey, you know, I'm into magic and all this stuff, and you want to do some spell work, come see me, here's my card. Obviously, Northern California has a lot more of a genre that you can be that and do that. Even Southern California, you know, has that. But when you're in a place that is not... and it's funny because I had a discussion with one of the people here about how people think. You know, they're the ones that – people that live in an environment where it is so structured are the ones that really practice a lot of what we're talking about for specific outcomes. So, you know, I live it. So I'm a dragon. I'm a whatever. You know, I'm it. There you are. And you can either see me or you don't, but I don't spend, you know, it's shape-shifting. And even though, unfortunately, and it was a fandom, what do you call it, internet place that I saw this on, and I thought, you know, she is a shapeshifter, okay, and she would her shape changed. She couldn't do it at will because she only could, you know, she was forced to do it. It came on a Saturday. It came on a particular time frame, and she was not able to, you know, do that. But that shape-shifting process is when you go beyond your own limits. And I think that's what I see as, you know, as her ultimate destination, was that she would eventually do that. And it was her own release of herself, not the release from her mother's curse or, you know, any of the other things. I think that would be episode, you know, season 59, episode one is her shifting into that other place. But that's why I, you know, I see this as a good base, but again, without having others trying to use you or abuse you or manipulate you for their own gain.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, that, I think that especially, you know, I don't think I've ever, like, just, you know, kind of blindly announced my spirituality or my witchcraft or anything. But I can appreciate that. It's like that really is an aspect of self that should be shared wisely. So that that makes a lot of sense. You know, I had a thought, Elvira. There was something like with Melusine's story that has always kind of made me wonder, like, maybe her mom was, you know, total biatch, you know, and did curse her. And the other thing is, I wonder, did the king ever get out of that mountain? But really what I'm thinking about is, I wonder if, okay, so that's the form of the story that's the most popular form. But it makes me wonder if she was actually really cursed. Because the thing is that her mother was a full-fledged fairy. And her father was a human. So I'm thinking, wouldn't she have had some aspect of that anyway? I mean, so I wonder, as part of that whole theme of the destruction of the divine feminine, if with the story being retold and reshaped, if she was ever actually cursed at all. I mean, maybe that's just what she was. And we don't know what happened to the king father. He might have got out the next day and, you know, said, like, don't do that anymore or something, you know. We don't really know.
It's true. It's true because it's been, it was put together and it was massaged somewhat gently, somewhat not, into different forms to be used for a reason. So what it really was is, I mean, if you think about it, she has a physical form. She has a spirit side to her. You come into life as a representation of a physical form with a spirit side, whether it's supernatural, fae, or it's just spirit. And you're here to learn how to not be trapped in the physical form, but to use it.
Yeah.
So as a metaphor, I personally think it was probably farther back in that way without it being somewhat utilized in these other ways. And, you know, you and I know that the stories have all been changed and you know, utilized for the purposes of those that were in the power or in the situation that wanted to do that. And because we don't have the ability to know, we have to go back and look at, well, what is the symbology here and where do you come in that level? They are, and whether there was a real person, I mean, like we talk about, we talked about Mott, and I also have to look at our time. We're coming up to 3 minutes, so we may have to kind of put a pin in this, which I know is really hard. But it's mostly about realizing that there was a certain level of empowerment that needed to be destabilized. And for whatever purposes, it's the same thing in effect throughout what we're seeing in the world now, what we've seen in history, what we, you know, that kind of a thing. So,
Talk about, I think definitely power, you know, issues of power here really, really enter into that so much. So, I mean, just, you know, with things that are going on in the world, and even with just this little example of Melusine through the centuries, and then looking at how the Starbucks logo ended up being.
I know.
You know, it's just like, that's
definitely
a continuation. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to. Well, and we'll find other ways to discuss this, I'm sure, the ways our topics are running. But we do need to kind of get a grip of our timing. And obviously, next week's topic in the process of inner transformation is going to be Reiki and other forms of energy healing. So this is going to be interesting because discussing it is half of that kind of process. The other half, of course, is experiencing it. So we're going to have an interesting hour of conversation and discussion. I, you know, look forward to that. So do you have any final moments before we transition off?
No, I think that's it. This has been a fun show.
Yes, it has. And I want to thank everyone and Nagashiva and you, Deb, for, you know, all of what we have done together today and continue to do from our previous shows. So have a wonderful time over the next week. We will see you back on the radio. This is my bye. I'll turn it to you.
Sounds good. I'll just say goodbye, everybody. Witch on, witch well, and witch wisely. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestesscauldron.com. That's witchpriestesscauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.